CLE Bio, the Ultimate Browns Podcast with Nate Lundy.
Welcome into the podcast. My name is Nate Lundy. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen. A lot on tap for the podcast this week as we kick things off. We'll get to our big interview in just a moment. Talk about the big storylines as training camp and the preseason are underway and the start of the regular season is just a couple of weeks away. Plus, we'll do Around the League with the coach, Brian Billick from NFL Network, as we will every week, a chance to visit with the coach. And we'll close things out this week's podcast with Overtime, a six pack of questions. This week's guest, Andrew Siciliano of the NFL Network and DirecTV's Red Zone channel. But it all gets started with the big interview next.
The big interview.
It is time to talk Browns as we do so with Landry Locker from CBS Radio in Cleveland, 92.3 The Fan. Landry, thanks for joining us. Let's start here. Everybody nationally talking about the second coming of RG3. He has returned. What's the conversation taking place there in Cleveland?
It's really skeptical excitement. You know, it's the beginning of the season. Everybody wants to be excited. Everybody likes to be excited. But the reality of the situation is, yeah, it's a quarterback that nobody else in the league wanted. You don't have a good record with quarterbacks, so it's really just kind of a stopgap type guy. I guess everybody's excited based on what they've seen early on, but I think at the same time, nobody's going to be surprised if RG3 is not the quarterback next year.
Now, on top of that, the other buzz, I guess you could say, is what folks have seen so far out of Terrell Pryor. What's your assessment there?
Well, I mean, I've never seen somebody have two preseason catches and get everybody so excited. I will say this, though, in practice, he does look like a wide receiver. The size that he has and just the way that he looks out there on the field. Granted, he is going against Brown's defensive backs, so you can take that with a grain of salt. But he's made two big plays in the preseason. A lot of excitement. And honestly, if you're looking at maybe building towards the future or seeing if Pryor can be a receiver in the future, the Josh Gordon suspension the first four games is going to give you that opportunity to see, you know, if Terrell Pryor can maybe be a guy that's one of your top three receivers here and now. So, you know, from a standpoint of a team that's trying to build something, Pryor's going to get every opportunity to be that number one or number two guy early on in the season. And based on what you've seen, he's shown glimpses, but we know that it's completely different once the season starts and you're having to grind it out when the games actually matter.
Landry, obviously everybody has a price, but do you think that the Browns would entertain if somebody wanted to trade for Gordon, or is he their guy?
Well, everybody in Cleveland that talks, it thinks, and this is not based on any information, but they think the Browns are the ones putting out these reports. So I think they would entertain trading Josh Gordon. I don't know what his value is. I know a few years ago San Francisco was offering a second, and Kendall Hunter, he's been suspended a couple times since then. So I don't know what the price would be, but I think the Browns would definitely listen if they could do it. And some people that know the team very well think that they're the ones that are actually putting this out, kind of putting their toe in the water to see if that's something that they could get done.
There's a lot to talk about with this team, and we're stuck in the offensive category for the moment. But two other names we want to talk about. Let's start here. Corey Coleman, your early assessment of the rook out of Baylor.
He's been the best player in training camp. Before he got a little bit banged up, I think we're actually going to get to see him here shortly. But Corey Coleman was by far and away the best player in training camp. He was dominating everybody again. There's really not a lot to talk about on that defense, and we've only seen him against Browns DBs. But just based on what you've seen from Corey Coleman, he was far and away the best player on the roster. He seems to be the guy that RG3 trusts the most. Just when Robert throws it to Corey Coleman, you see him get a little bit excited when he makes the play. They seem to have a little bit of a connection. So just from what we've seen on the practice field up there in Cleveland, he is definitely was the best player in camp.
And sticking with the receiver theme, but let's slide to the tight end. Gary Barnidge kind of emerged last year, certainly from a fantasy football standpoint. Everybody loved him. What's the expectation in terms of his involvement with the offense for 2016?
Probably more of the same. I think they're expecting Gary to put up numbers like he did last year. Hugh Jackson seems to, just based on what they've seen, obviously they're not going to show everything else. He likes to get him out in the flats. He likes to get him out there. And if we are talking fantasy football, I mean, when a team's trailing by 21 points or something like that, I know it's not that there's nothing clutch about it, but in fantasy football, when a guy's racking up yards at the end against soft defenses, that's the guy to go to. So I could see Gary Barnage, if you're just talking about your fantasy squad, being a guy that you want to get.
Oh, yeah, garbage points. I'll take garbage points left and right.
Garbage points count the same as normal ones in the fantasy world.
I was going to say, I mean, Landry, come on, that's stuff that we want. Talking with Landry Locker from 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland, CBS Radio there. Landry, let's slide over to the running game right now, because sometimes for a quarterback, regardless of whether you're a rookie, a veteran, whatever, sometimes your best friend is a solid running game. What about the running game and maybe that dovetailing into this offensive line?
Yeah, the offensive line is going to be it's going to be a work in progress. I mean, they lose a couple of their best players last year. Granted, it wasn't a very good offensive line. It looks like Cam Irving is going to be the full-time center. He's had struggles. Hugh Jackson gets real defensive when you say that he struggled, but he has struggled at times. So who knows what the offensive line is going to be. From a running back perspective, they'd like to see Duke Johnson take the next step. He showed some flashes last year, but you know, don't really know if he's a guy that you can that can carry the full load. And then they got Isaiah Crowell, who had a little bit of problem this offseason, but it's going to be a two horse thing they got going. They kind of ignored the running back position this year in hopes that maybe they can get something out of Duke. So as far as the running backs and the offensive line, it's really not a lot to get excited about. People are more excited about the receivers on the offensive side.
You brought up Hugh Jackson. Just overall, your thoughts on the new head coach?
I'm a believer in Hugh Jackson. I think if they allow Hugh Jackson to do what he wants to do and they allow him to build his team, I think Hugh Jackson can be a very, very good coach. He's very accountable. He's not hesitant to call out anybody and everybody. And the Browns do have pretty much two drafts next year. They have two firsts and two seconds with the trade they made with the Eagles. So I think if they are patient with Hugh Jackson, they allow him to do what he does, what he wants to do, and just be a little bit patient, I'm a believer in Hugh Jackson.
Can this defense keep them in games?
No. Just flat out, no. I don't know if this defense can keep them in games or not. You know, a lot of times they're just going to have to take advantage of any opportunity they get. If a ball bounces up, they're going to have to catch it. There's not much wiggle room there. The defense is going to be a very, very big problem. There's not a lot of playmakers on the defense. They actually lost some of the playmakers this offseason because they are in rebuild mode. This is not going to be a very good defense at all.
And last one for you, as you go through the final portions of the preseason, working your way towards week one, what's the one thing you're still looking for out of this team?
I want to see what Corey Coleman looks like. That's really the one thing I want to see. I want to see what Corey Coleman looks like in game action. That's really what you want to see. And you want to see that this defense, if anybody emerges, if they drafted a couple guys in the second and third round, Ogba out of Oklahoma State and Nash out of Penn State, who have actually shown some sort of signs. You just want to see if some of these young guys can show that maybe they're future building blocks in the future. But I want to see the wide receiver out of Baylor, Corey Coleman, and I just want to see if this defense can look somewhat competent.
And a record, maybe not necessarily what you would predict the final record to be, but what's going to be acceptable, or what are folks going to sit back and say, okay, that was maybe not a great season, but it was okay?
It's such a slippery slope because, you know, I don't think anyone's expecting this team to win the division. If they win six games, I almost think Hugh Jackson's, with this roster, he's maximized what he can do. But if you win six games, you're going to be drafting in the 10 to 12. So, I think there's a lot of fans in Cleveland that would rather than win one or two games, get the first pick, and then you're building your team around Deshaun Watson or something like that. So as far as realistic expectations, I would say 3 to 4 games maybe. If you win six, it's a slippery slope because, yeah, it's great. Hugh Jackson maximized it, but you're also probably not going to get your quarterback of the future next year unless Philadelphia is awful, which is possible as well.
You find him on Twitter, at Landry Locker, part of CBS Radio in Cleveland, 92.3 The Fan. Landry Locker with us talking Browns. Landry, thanks.
Thank you very much for having me.
Stay tuned. The coach, Brian Billick, coming up next.
Around the League.
It is time for us to go around the league, and as we will do each week throughout the season, we're joined from the NFL Network. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. It is the Coach Brian Billick. And first of all, Coach, how's your offseason been?
It's been great. As usual, too short. But it's time for football, so we'll crank this thing up.
It always feels like it's too short. Let's talk about some of the stories from the offseason and even from training camp and beyond. A few interesting quarterback moves, so let's start here. First of all, what's your assessment of the Broncos quarterback situation and the decision Gary Kubiak's having to make?
Well, anytime you take a quarterback in the first round, obviously L.A. doing it with Jared Goff and then Carson Wentz in Philadelphia, and then Paxton Lynch in Denver. At some point, you've got to know these guys are going to start. I mean, since the, Aaron Rodgers did it in 2005, and he's the poster child for those that say, okay, you shouldn't start a quarterback, let him sit in and learn behind somebody else. Well, with all due respect, he sat in behind Brett Favre. That's a Hall of Famer. And Carson Wentz and Jared Goff and Paxton Lynch, they're not sitting behind Hall of Fame. In my opinion, they ought to play. And it sounds like Paxton Lynch, particularly with a team like Denver, that's going to pack a great defense. They anticipate running the ball well. Why would you not start him?
And then when you go from Denver, let's stay in the West. Let's go to the NFC West. What about what Chip Kelly is dealing with in San Francisco with Gabbert, with Kaepernick? It feels like it's a very odd situation that he's trying to decide who his quarterback for 2016 is going to be.
Yeah, you know, what the old adage is, if you have two or three quarterbacks, you have no quarterback. I mean, it should be very clear-cut. And he may have already decided. I think there's still an upside for Colin Kaepernick. We'll see how he fits into the Chip Kelly system. You'd think it would be fabulous. Blaine Gabbert, I think we've seen, is a backup, a good, solid backup in this league. I don't know that you're going to be a championship-caliber club. Colin Kaepernick still has a little of that upside. But the hard thing will be that this roster is not a great roster right now. It's not a great defense. You know, you hope that Carlos Hyde can stay healthy and run the ball. The receiving core, they have some potential there, but I don't know they have the absolute go-to guy, and that includes their tight ends. Vance McDonald is kind of pedestrian. So I think the group that he's going to be working with, along with the defense that's clearly having to rebuild, I think there's going to be some challenges for Chip in San Francisco.
What about a positive quarterback story, at least from what we've seen in the preseason so far, and that's Robert Griffin III in Cleveland. A lot of folks feel like maybe we're starting to see the RG3 that we saw at the very beginning in Washington.
Well, you hope so, because obviously this guy has a lot of talent. If he can stay healthy, and that's a big if, that's something obviously everybody's going to watch to see, because they keep saying, we're going to let Robert Griffin be Robert Griffin. Well, when Robert Griffin was Robert Griffin, when he was RG3, he got hurt. And so I'm looking for a guy that can he beat you from the pocket? Yeah, can he do the things outside? He's got potentially, and I'm hesitant to use that word because the old adage is in coaching, son, your potential is going to get me fired. But if there's some potential, it looks like Terrell Pryor has some upside in terms of the receiver. If indeed Josh Gordon can come back and be solid for them, if they can get that running game cranked up, then that's going to complement RG3 and give them a chance, obviously, to piece this thing together. And I don't think anybody expects them to be a playoff team, but they can be a good, solid, competitive team.
The buzz down in Dallas is, of course, all about Dak Prescott, and we know it's a limited sample size of preseason, but what were your thoughts on Prescott going into the draft, and are they coming to fruition?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the Dak Prescott, this is different than the first-round conversation, which is good. Because for the Dallas Cowboys, obviously with Tony Romo, it's all about keeping Tony Romo healthy. But if you can get and reach down into the fourth round like they did for Dak Prescott, this is a talented guy. A lot of people will equate his game a little bit in terms of Russell Wilson. Now, that you say that, people go, oh, boy, well, this guy needs to be your starter. I'm just saying that he's a later draft choice that's showing some potential. I did see an interesting comment from him in talking about how He feels like he's ready for whatever the NFL is going to throw at him, whether it's a vanilla defense or, as he said, a rocky road defense. I think I'm ready. Well, let's hold on that. I prefer to have a rookie quarterback know just enough to be afraid, because I love the bravado, but the difference that he'll see in the regular season versus the preseason, notwithstanding Tony Romo staying healthy, but obviously for Dallas, they've got the best of both worlds. If indeed he can be a serviceable backup, yet a young quarterback that they can develop, you couldn't ask for more than your backup quarter in your backup quarter position.
The coach, Brian Billick, with us. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick, as we go around the league. Coach, let's talk about a couple of coaching changes. How do you think the young Adam Gase, and I always wind up feeling older when I see a head coach who's 30, but nonetheless, a young Adam Gase, how do you think he'll do in Miami?
Well, he's got it set up to do very well. I mean, he was brought in. He's the current quarterback whisperer. So he's going to come in, and Tannehill is going to be that next protege, and that next quarterback. Indeed, can he transform this guy who's had a solid beginning in his career? That's how it's going to be judged, because the expectations in Miami are very high in terms of what they think they can do. Obviously, in that division, it's all about, can you supplant New England? I don't know if they're good enough to do that. So the next question is, are they good enough to be a wild card team? And that's a tall order in the AFC.
What about Doug Peterson in Philadelphia? What's your assessment of Peterson?
Well, he certainly brings the right pedigree in terms of having been a former player, being a part of successful teams with Andy Reid. He's certainly in a familiar situation. Let's go back and remember that Doug Peterson was brought in to be the quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles in Andy Reid's first year in 1999 to basically hold down the spot until Donovan McNabb could eventually take it over, which he did middle to late season. Now, that was a 5-11 team. He now is sitting on a team where he's got a couple quarterbacks, more than a couple. Sam Bradford, obviously, they paid all that money to. They went out and moved up and used a lot of assets to go get Carson Wentz. But I was up at their training camp, early in training camp, and had a chance to visit with Coach Peterson. And he and Howie Roseman, the general manager, seemed wholly committed to Carson Wentz not playing this year. Now, I don't know that that's going to happen. As I said, since Aaron Rodgers took over or was drafted back in 2005, 29 quarterbacks have been taken in the first round, and only a handful have not played in the first year. Only four, to be exact: Aaron Rodgers, Jason Campbell, Grady Quinn, and Jake Locker. Now, that's not an impressive list outside of Rodgers. So those that want to make the camp, well, maybe you shouldn't play your quarterback in the first year, hasn't turned out real well. So we're going to find out if Doug Peterson wants to emulate what he did for the Philadelphia Eagles and just kind of be a placeholder until they can get Carson Wentz into the starting lineup.
As you look at the NFL over the course of the last year, certainly the last 8 or 9 months, Coach, we've seen, whether it's the Al Jazeera report, we've seen Deflategate, we've seen a number of things going on. Are we in jeopardy at all with the league of Roger Goodell, any of the decisions or anything that he's doing? Is it starting to hurt the image of the league when it comes to the fans?
Oh, I don't think so. Particularly when we're talking, it's kind of talking out of both sides of the mouth when the media wants to say, well, is Roger Goodell too tough? Is he too authoritarian, as the players and the union will say? But by the same token, the NFL can't suffer these black eyes. He's got to get it under control. And that's really what it's going to come down to. We just saw the recent situation in the Olympics with Ryan Lott, and how it's so often it's not the act itself, it's the cover-up or the lack of taking responsibility for it that is much, much more difficult. And that's what Roger Goodell and the league are trying to do, to make sure that these players understand there's going to be an accountability. There's a red line in the sand, and if you cross it, you're going to be held accountable for it.
The coach, Brian Billick, with us. Last one for you, Coach. Give me a team that is going to surprise us, and it could be a team that we think isn't going to be very good, who's going to be better than expected, or a team that has high expectations that's going to underachieve.
Wow. Well, let's go with the positive on that. And you know, when we talk about this and the work I do for the NFL Network, we're at that time of year where everybody wants to talk about that same thing about who are the teams that are going to surprise us. And the criteria is, okay, let's begin with the teams that weren't in the playoffs last year.
Right.
Because obviously you got to see what the Carolina Panthers do. Washington Redskins, who I think are going to be pretty good. Can they get back in the playoffs? But a team that clearly needs to do well for their coach, but I think his position could be pretty good, is Jacksonville. Now, they need to be good, because obviously Gus Bradley's only got 10 or 11 wins, 12 wins over the last 3 years. But you've got to love, at least in the preseason and certainly in the third year, Blake Bortles seems ready, along with, you know, that great receiving core with Allen Robinson and Allen Hurn. The tight end position is a solid one with Mercedes Lewis. Julius Thomas, who they brought in last year in free agency, could step up and have a big year for them. And obviously in the running game, getting Chris Ivory to go with E.J. Yeldon. They're going to have some offensive weapons. And, of course, Gus Bradley went out and drafted a bunch of defensive guys who they're going to play. They don't have to be great defense, but they got to be better. This could be a team in the AFC South that really could be wide open that makes their way into the playoffs.
And they're benefited, Coach, aren't they, by the division that they're in? Sometimes the geography around you benefits you, that there isn't like a Patriots or a Carolina Panthers type team that they're trying to climb over either.
Yeah, and I regrettably, we always will start the season off and, okay, what coaches are on the hot seat? And well, that division's on the hot seat, because every single one of those coaches, whether it be Chuck Pagano in Indianapolis, the expectations with a healthy Ryan Leaf, whether down on Mike Mularkey, all but a first year. You go, how can a first-year coach be on the hot seat? Well, let's remember what happened in Jacksonville, where he went 1 year and got fired. The expectations that Marcus Mariota is going to be better. And obviously down in Houston, they went out and spent the big money on a quarterback that the Denver Broncos said they didn't want to spend the money on, and Brock Osweiler. Brock Osweiler's got to come through for Billy O'Brien, or it could be, you know, could be a problem for him. So I think that whole division of coaches is on hot.
I say it every single year. You're a smarter football fan if you spend some time with the coach, Brian Billick. He's on Twitter, at Coach Billick. Coach, look forward to visiting with you again throughout the season. Thanks for the time.
Sounds great. It'll be fun.
Coming up next, it will be time for Overtime, a six-pack of questions, rapid-fire style, with the NFL Network's Andrew Siciliano. Overtime is next.
Overtime.
It is time for Overtime. That means we got a six-pack of questions, because what else do you do during overtime but make another trip to the bar and grab a six-pack so that you can enjoy it? This week, our guest in Overtime from the NFL Network is Andrew Siciliano. Andrew, how are you?
Nate, how are you?
I'm doing very well, my friend. You ready for a six-pack of questions here?
Are they alcohol-free?
Well, they are alcohol-free, just in case you've got to go in front of the camera here in a moment.
Good.
All right.
Double check. Go ahead.
Let's start here. Question number one. Which rookie quarterback is going to start first, Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, or Paxton Lynch?
Paxton Lynch.
And why is that?
Jared Goff might be my other answer. I think it, no doubt Case Keenum is going to be the starting quarterback for the Rams out of the gate. They have two difficult division games right out of the gate, so you're not going to see Goff, I don't think, in September. Paxton Lynch, as of our taping, Nate, still has a shot, if he performs well in week three of the preseason, to get the starting job, as absurd as that sounded a couple of weeks ago. And I think Paxton Lynch very well could be the two behind Trevor Siemian. And Trevor Siemian, somewhat unproven. That would put Paxton Lynch in a great position.
All right. Question number two. Do you think Ezekiel Elliott is going to break Tony Dorsett's 1977 rookie rushing record for the Cowboys of 1,007 yards?
Yes.
In what week?
Well, you need to average 66 yards, roughly, I believe, or 65 or something like that, a week to get to 1,000. So do the math. I say he looks like a 1,200-yard back.
Yeah, I think so, too. I'm with you on that one. All right, question number three. Do you think that Tom Brady's suspension is going to mean the end of the Patriots' run at the top of the AFC East?
Absolutely not. Call me except in December when they win the division.
All right, question number four. Will this intriguing Jacksonville Jaguars team, led by a defense they've been rebuilding, do you think they make the playoffs?
Ooh. I'm going to say no, but I'm going to say they make a run for it and look like a 9-7 team. I'm still not entirely sold, but I'm excited. When the schedule came out in April, I said Green Bay on the road week one at Jacksonville was your sneaky good game of September.
As you look at Cleveland, are we seeing the resurrection of Robert Griffin III?
Yes. The question is, how long will the life be once resurrected? He certainly looks good in the preseason. It is still the preseason. Pump your brakes, Dak Prescott fans. RG3 has proven he could play and win in this league. Can he do it as a drop-back passer? Can Hugh Jackson truly, truly give him sustained success? I don't know. I mean, the right side of it off, well, right tackle is an issue. They have some weapons offensively, But blocking and tackling still will be an issue, which doesn't always bode well for the quarterback. Don't be shocked if they are in the number one overall discussion next year. Maybe not at number one, but at least trying to trade up to get a certain quarterback from the ACC, who for the time being shall remain nameless because he's an underclass.
Let me do a follow-up to question number five. Do you think RG3 ever makes it back to the Pro Bowl?
Well, Teddy Bridgewater made the Pro Bowl last year, and I like Teddy, but he only had like 14 touchdown passes. The way people drop out of the Pro Bowl, I'll never say never for anybody making the Pro Bowl.
All right, last question from our six-pack in overtime with NFL Network's Andrew Siciliano. Do you believe by this time next year we will be referring to the Las Vegas Raiders?
I would say, because it's Vegas and we're playing the odds, that it is slightly better than 50-50 that we will. However, never underestimate the likelihood of an iconic franchise staying home with a last-second deal.
I have said that I'd never want to see a city lose their team, but given that I'm in Denver with the AFC West, it could be kind of fun with the Raiders in Vegas. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Nate, a man of your fame and your needs, you know, I can't imagine that you need a Raiders game to hop on a $79 one-way flight to Vegas.
As long as you're going to meet me there. It's Andrew Siciliano from the NFL Network, part of Overtime with our six-pack of questions for this week. Andrew, thanks.
Yes, sir.
And there you have it. That's how the Overtime works, a six-pack of questions for a different analyst each week, and it also wraps up our podcast for this week. Thanks for being a part of it. We'll talk to you soon.
This has been a Sports Joe production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsjoe.com.